Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for In the News and American Stories, coming up after As It Is. Hello again, and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. Egyptian officials say the country's tourism industry is recovering. But officials say historical sites and other travel business are not profitable enough to fix the country's economy. We will have that story later in the program. But first, representatives from almost 200 countries are meeting in Lima, Peru, for talks on a new United Nations climate treaty. The new treaty would replace the Kyoto Protocol, the international agreement that ended in 2012. As we hear from Katie Weaver, delegates in Lima are preparing for a meeting next year when they will try to reach a final agreement.
Scientists say the world is on its way toward a temperature increase of 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial levels. Temperatures have already risen by almost 1 degree Celsius. Greenhouse gas releases, or emissions, are blamed for the rising temperatures. The gases are created by burning fossil fuels, like coal and petroleum. The meeting in Lima ended December 12th. The delegates discussed ways to control and reduce those emissions. The talks opened with a sense of hope for a deal. Last month, the United States agreed to cut emissions by 26 to 28% below 2005 levels. At the same time, China said its emissions would stop rising by about 2030. China and the U.S. are the world's top climate polluters. Jennifer Morgan is the Global Director of the Climate Program at the World Resources Institute. She notes recent signs of progress toward a climate deal, like the UN climate meeting in New York City in September that brought together heads of state and industry leaders. It also led to demonstrations of about 700,000 people in New York and other cities to demand action on climate change. Jennifer Morgan explains what happened next.
European heads of state in October saying, here's our offer to reduce at least 40% emissions. And then the U.S.-China announcement recently, where those two countries came forward in a pretty historic announcement of what they're willing to do on their numbers and their willingness to work together.
Ms. Morgan says the move could energize other nations to do more.
If you look at developed countries, it's fair to say that Australia or Canada haven't indicated when they are going to table their offer. Well, if China can offer something, certainly they can offer something too.
She says some developing nations, like India and Brazil, may also feel challenged to act. Rajendra Pachauri is the head of the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. On the opening day of the talks, he told representatives in Lima that the window for action is rapidly closing. Ms. Morgan says she hopes the meeting in Lima will end with a proposal for a new treaty that will guide negotiators and lead governments to act. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. Officials in Egypt say the country's tourist industry appears to be recovering after years of unrest. Egypt enjoyed a huge increase in visitors during summer and early autumn, but observers say continued insecurity makes tourism undependable and not profitable enough to cure the country's weak economy. Jerry Watson has more.
Sharm el-Sheikh is a historic resort town on the Sinai Peninsula. Foreign tourists often travel to Sharm el-Sheikh to see the Red Sea, but they see none of the insecurity that sometimes puts the town's name in the news. Egyptian officials say they hope that by next year, tourism will return to its pre-2011 level. At that time, the industry earned more than $12 billion in a year. Tourism Minister Hichem Zazu says the hope and challenge is to report a major return to profitability in the first part of the year. But some observers say this may prove difficult. They say the industry depends on international public opinion of Egypt's safety in a time of continued unrest. Sami Barodi teaches political science at Lebanese American University. He says Egypt needs more economic diversity and to reduce its dependence on travelers.
Tourism is a very important but volatile sector. So you cannot pin your economic strategy on a sector that one or two bombings or one or two, basically, assassinations may impact adversely.
He says that for Egypt to escape widespread crushing poverty, the country needs to invest in industry and export goods. But he adds that unlike the export business, Egypt's tourism industry already has the infrastructure and expertise that it needs.
So we have to bear in mind all the investments that have been done in the tourism sector, all the jobs in Egypt that are tied to tourism, and you know the government cannot but give high priority to this sector.
3 years of political upset have led two Egyptian governments to collapse. And economists say even if the government succeeds in getting tourists to return, it will still need to depend heavily on foreign aid. Marwan Iskander is an economist in Lebanon.
It's not enough to help Egypt to take off because the events that took place from 2011 till 2013 had hindered the growth of the economy significantly.
At this time, protests and clashes in Egypt continue. They threaten to affect some of the recent successes in the tourism industry. But Marwan Iskander says new markets are opening up. He notes a large increase in the number of Russians visiting Egypt in recent years. And tour guides say insecurity, like the Nile River, will prove long-lasting. I'm Jerry Watson.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for another As It Is. And visit our website for even more Learning English programs. learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thanks for listening.
In the News is next, followed by American Stories. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is In the News. The United States increased security at U.S. offices around the world this week after the release of a Senate Intelligence Committee report. The report describes how the Central Intelligence Agency treated terror suspects after the September 11, 2001 attacks. It accuses the agency of misleading Congress and the American people about its methods for gathering information. The report tells about the CIA's use of forceful methods to question at least 119 people. Those individuals were detained between late 2001 and January of 2009. Critics say the report shows the CIA was torturing terror suspects. The report says the CIA kept some detainees in small places and forced others to stay awake in a standing position for long periods. Another interrogation method was waterboarding, which makes the individual feel as if he or she is drowning. Former President George W. Bush approved the interrogation program after the 2001 attacks on the United States. President Barack Obama banned the techniques when he took office in 2009. The release of the report has led to widespread calls for legal action against U.S. officials. Laura Pitter is with Human Rights Watch.
Really, the ones to blame in this case are the senior U.S. officials that authorized the abuse knowing that it was illegal. They're the ones at the top that need to be held accountable for these crimes.
The report says several U.S. allies provided assistance to the Central Intelligence Agency. This week, Poland's former president admitted for the first time that he approved a CIA base on Polish territory. But Alexander Kwasniewski also said he did not know that torture was taking place. 4 years ago, a parliamentary investigation in Lithuania found that the CIA operated a base near the capital, Vilnius. That investigation may now be reopened. Britain has also been linked to the CIA program. Prime Minister David Cameron spoke about the issue this week. He said that an investigation has been opened.
So I'm confident this issue has been dealt with from the British perspective, and I think I can reassure the public about that. But overall, we should be clear, torture is wrong.
Many terror suspects were taken to the U.S. military base in Guantanamo Bay. Among them was British citizen Moazzam Begg, who was released after 3 years. He said on Wednesday that the recent executions of Westerners by Islamic State militants can be linked to the CIA's actions.
ISIS was born in the dungeons of Abu Ghraib. It was born in the dungeons of the Iraqi prisons that were under U.S. occupation. And that's where this hatred and animosity has festered.
There are fears that the terror threat to the United States and its allies will intensify. Jihadist groups have reportedly used social media to call for a reaction to the report. Charles E. Allen is a former assistant director of the intelligence agency. He said the threat had increased.
Yes, it will threaten Americans. Our people need to be protected. Their identities need to be protected. And I'd hate to see any blood come from this, but I fear there will be an attack.
Security has been strengthened at U.S. embassies to guard against possible attack. And that's in the news from VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Cruz.
Now, the
VOA Special English Program, American Stories. Our story today is called $1,000. It was written by O. Henry. Here is Steve Ember with the story.
$1,000, said the lawyer Tolman in a severe and serious voice, and here is the money. Young Gillian touched the thin package of $50 bills and laughed. It's such an unusual amount, he explained kindly to the lawyer. If it had been $10,000, a man might celebrate with a lot of fireworks. Even $50 would have been less trouble.
You heard the reading of your uncle's will after he died, continued the lawyer Tolman. I do not know if you paid much attention to its details. I must remind you of one. You are required to provide us with a report of how you use this $1,000 as soon as you have spent it. I trust that you will obey the wishes of your late uncle.
You may depend on it, said the young man respectfully. Gillian went to his club. He searched for a man he called Old Bryson. Old Bryson was a calm, antisocial man, about 40 years old. He was in a corner reading a book. When he saw Gillian coming near, he took a noisy, deep breath, laid down his book, and took off his glasses. I have a funny story to tell you, said Gillian.
I wish you would tell it to someone in the billiard room, said Old Bryson. You know how I hate your stories.
This is a better one than usual, said Gillian, rolling a cigarette, and I'm glad to tell it to you. It's too sad and funny to go with the rattling of billiard balls. I've just come from a meeting with my late uncle's lawyers. He leaves me an even $1,000. Now, what can a man possibly do with $1,000? Old Bryson showed very little interest.
I thought the late Septimus Gillian was worth something like $500,000.
He was, agreed Gillian happily, and that's where the joke comes in. He has left a lot of his money to an organism. That is, part of it goes to the man who invents a new bacillus, and the rest to establish a hospital for doing away with it again. There are one or two small, unimportant gifts on the side. The butler and the housekeeper get a seal ring and $10 each. His nephew gets $1,000.
Were there any others mentioned in your uncle's will? Asked Old Bryson.
None, said Gillian. Well, there is a Miss Hayden. My uncle was responsible for her. She lived in his house. She's a quiet thing, musical, the daughter of somebody who was unlucky enough to be his friend. I forgot to say that she was in on the ring and $10 joke, too. I wish I had been. Then I could have had two bottles of wine, given the ring to the waiter, and had the whole business off my hands. Now tell me what a man can do with $1,000. Old Bryson rubbed his glasses and smiled. And when Old Bryson smiled, Gillian knew that he intended to be more offensive than ever.
There are many good things a man could do with $1,000, said Bryson. You, he said with a gentle laugh, why, Bobby Gillian, there's only one reasonable thing you could do. You can go and buy Miss Lotta Laurier a diamond necklace with the money. And then take yourself off to Idaho and inflict your presence upon a ranch. I advise a sheep ranch, as I have a particular dislike for sheep.
Thanks, said Gillian, as he rose from his chair. I knew I could depend on you, old Bryson. You've hit on the very idea. I wanted to spend the money on one thing, because I have to turn in a report for it, and I hate itemizing. Gillian phoned for a cab and said to the driver, "The stage entrance of the Columbine Theater." The theater was crowded. Miss Lotta Laurier was preparing for her performance when her assistant spoke the name of Mr. Gillian. "Let it in," said Miss Laurier. "Now, what is it, Bobby? I'm going on stage in 2 minutes." "It won't take 2 minutes for me. What do you say to a little thing in the jewelry line? I can spend $1,000. "Say, Bobby," said Miss Laurier, "did you see that necklace Della Stacy had on the other night? It cost $2,200 at Tiffany's." Miss Laurier was called to the stage for her performance. Gillian slowly walked out to where his cab was waiting. "What would you do with $1,000 if you had it?" he asked the driver.
"Open a drinking place," said the driver quickly. "I know a place I could take money in with both hands. I've got it worked out, if you were thinking of putting up the money."
"Oh, no," said Gillian. "I was just wondering." 8 blocks down Broadway, Gillian got out of the cab. A blind man sat on the sidewalk selling pencils. Gillian went out and stood in front of him. "Excuse me, but would you mind telling me what you would do if you had $1,000? Asked Gillian. The blind man took a small book from his coat pocket and held it out. Gillian opened it and saw that it was a bank deposit book. It showed that the blind man had a balance of $1,785 in his bank account. Gillian returned the bank book and got back into the cab. "I forgot something," he said. "You may drive to the law offices of Tolman and Sharp." Lawyer Tolman looked at Gillian in a hostile and questioning way. "I beg your pardon," said Gillian cheerfully, "but was Miss Hayden left anything by my uncle's will in addition to the ring and the $10?
"Nothing," said Mr. Tolman.
"I thank you very much, sir," said Gillian, and went to his cab. He gave the driver the address of his late uncle's home. Miss Hayden was writing letters in the library. The small, thin woman wore black clothes, but you would have noticed her eyes. Gillian entered the room as if the world were unimportant. "I have just come from old Tolman's," he explained. "They have been going over the papers down there. They found a..." Gillian searched his memory for a legal term. "They found an amendment or a postscript or something to the will. It seemed that my uncle had second thoughts and willed you $1,000. Tolman asked me to bring you the money. Here it is." Gillian laid the money beside her hand on the desk. Miss Hayden turned white. "Oh," she said, and again, "Oh." Gillian half turned and looked out the window. In a low voice, he said, "I suppose, of course, that you know I love you." "I am sorry," said Miss Hayden as she picked up her money. "There is no use?" asked Gillian, almost lightheartedly. "I am sorry," she said again. "May I write a note?" asked Gillian with a smile. Miss Hayden supplied him with paper and pen, and then went back to her writing table. Gillian wrote a report of how he spent the $1,000. Paid by Robert Gillian, $1,000 on account of the eternal happiness owed by heaven to the best and dearest woman on earth. Gillian put the note into an envelope. He bowed to Miss Hayden and left. His cab stopped again at the offices of Tolman and Sharp. "I have spent the $1,000, he said cheerfully to Tolman, "and I have come to present a report of it as I agreed." He threw a white envelope on the lawyer's table. Without touching the envelope, Mr. Tolman went to a door and called his partner, Sharp. Together, they searched for something in a large safe. They brought out a big envelope sealed with wax. As they opened the envelope, they shook their heads together over its contents. Then Tolman became the spokesman.
"Mr. Gillian," he said, "there was an addition to your uncle's will. It was given to us privately, with instructions that it not be opened until you had provided us with a full report of your handling of the $1,000 received in the will. As you have satisfied the conditions, my partner and I have read the addition. I will explain to you the spirit of its contents. In the event that your use of the $1,000 shows that you possess any of the qualifications that deserve reward, you stand to gain much more. If your disposal of the money in question has been sensible, wise, or unselfish, it is in our power to give you bonds to the value of $50,000. But if you have used this money in a wasteful, foolish way, as you have in the past, the $50,000 is to be paid to Miriam Hayden, ward of the late Mr. Gillian, without delay. Now, Mr. Gillian, Mr. Sharp and I will examine your report of the $1,000. Mr. Tolman reached for the envelope. Gillian was a little quicker in taking it up. He calmly tore the report and its cover into pieces and dropped them into his pocket. "It's all right," he said smilingly. "There isn't a bit of need to bother you with this. I don't suppose you would understand these itemized bets anyway. I lost the $1,000 on the races. Good day to you, gentlemen." Tolman and Sharp shook their heads mournfully at each other when Gillian left. They heard him whistling happily in the hallway as he waited for the elevator.
$1,000 was written by O. Henry. It was adapted for Special English by Luan Davis. The storyteller and producer was Steve Ember. You can read and listen to other American stories on our website, voaspecialenglish.com. I'm Faith Lapidus.